You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
Hello and welcome back to Out of Office. Our guest today heads a company that's become a household name. The company's name is Pfizer, and the man who leads it, well, his name is Albert Bourla. As you know, Pfizer became the first pharma company to get approval for the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine for COVID. It was a moment the world had been waiting for. Albert tells us what it was like for him.
It's difficult even to describe it, and it's difficult even to... It was just an explosion of emotions when that happened. And I sat on a chair and I opened a glass of wine, but suddenly strange emotions were coming in my head. My parents, people that died, people that worked very hard to make this vaccine, and I had given them so hard time myself by pushing them. And I could feel that now they can see their efforts rewarded.
Albert had been overseeing the development of this vaccine for months. Despite the challenges, he had faith they would create it. He believes the impossible is possible, a view shaped by his family's history and of his parents' Holocaust story.
My mother had also brothers that they went to Auschwitz and they survived and came back. Unfortunately, not their parents, but themselves they did. My mom, particularly, that was a very, very optimistic person in her life, she would use that as an example that never say this is the end, but never say this is impossible. Everything is possible.
Albert had a wide-ranging conversation with my colleague, Nicole Sawyer. They spoke about the vaccine, vaccine equity, his family, his love for animals. He's a former vet. It's a great conversation, and I do hope you'll make the time to listen to it. So here's Nicole with Albert.
I'm Nicole Sawyer, Senior Director of Programming and Senior Editor for Bloomberg Live. I'm joined now by Dr. Albert Bourla, the CEO and Chairman for Pfizer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Nicole, and please call me Albert.
Sounds good. Albert, what inspired you to pursue a career in the pharmaceutical industry?
You know, it was more serendipity. I was always wanted to pursue a career in academia. And I was a veterinarian, I did PhD, and I was working in the university. And Pfizer was recruiting in Athens, and somehow a recruiter convinced me maybe to make to take a sabbatical from academia and join Pfizer in Athens, actually, in Greece. I went with the expectations that I will work maybe for less than 2 years and then I will go back to academia. I felt that could be an interesting experience. But 6 months into the job, I loved it. I never went back to academia because I felt that this dynamism and the ability to have an impact that you have in the private sector is what fit most my personality.
And you said you were a veterinarian. So I have to ask, how many pets do you have?
I have two right now, a smaller one and a bigger one.
And what kind of animals are they? What's your favorite animal?
Yeah, both there are dogs, and I love dogs, and I love all animals. That's why I became also a veterinarian.
Man's best friend. Being the CEO of Pfizer, it's very different today than it was, say, 3 years ago. How are you coping with this change?
You know, you need to suddenly, life happens and you are in the middle of a situation and you need to rise to the occasion. And this is what I did, and I'm sure many other CEOs did the same, and if someone else was sitting in this chair, would have done the same. So you understand the responsibilities that fate has put on your shoulders, and you carry on. And that's what I did.
And you were talking about that responsibility, becoming a CEO that runs a pharmaceutical company to now all of a sudden one of the most sought after men in the world. That has a huge responsibility behind it. What changes have you had to make in your daily life? Do you all of a sudden need more security, or does your family need more security?
Yeah, all of that. I think these are the side effects that you don't really enjoy. I mean, you don't have privacy. Now, most of the times, it is not a problem. Sometimes you wish that you could go to a restaurant and people don't recognize you. It's always for good right now. I mean, I'm going to a restaurant and people... I have seen everything. I mean, people giving me standing ovation just entering to a restaurant, or the chef going out of the kitchen thanking me because they were able to open the restaurant, the business, thanks to the vaccine. But of course, there are also people that have different views about vaccinations, and some that they think that it's not good to have vaccines, and those can become an issue.
What's one crazy thing that has happened for maybe someone that's not a fan of the vaccine?
Frankly, I have never been in front of a situation like that myself. But I know other colleagues of mine that they had that unfortunate, and it is an unpleasant discussion. And sometimes, if it is passionate, it creates fear to the scientists, for example, that will be encountered by someone who doesn't believe that vaccines are good.
And speaking of the vaccine, can you describe the moment you realized Pfizer had the vaccine? Was it a slow realization or an instant moment? Where were you during this moment?
It's difficult even to describe it, and it's difficult even to think back. Was it gradual? Was it instant? It was a very important moment, and it happened. It's just a yes or no. That's the first thing that you hear. Yes, no. It's not anything complicated. It was just an explosion of emotions when that happened. And then the second thing that I had to hear was the level of efficacy that was game-changing, 95.6%. It was our interim analysis. That was another moment, that it was more of a moment of reflection. I tried to understand, what does this mean for the world? The moment I heard that, there were only 3 or 4 people in the world that knew that information, and it was likely the most material information in the world at that stage, right? Could drive global health, economy, etc. And then all the hours that followed that were dedicated to processes and what needs to be done, rather than me reflecting or letting my emotions relax. It was only in the evening of that day when I went home, and I had both my kids home and my wife, because they were in college, so they were working from home. And I sat on a chair and I opened a glass of wine, but suddenly strange emotions were coming in my head. My parents, people that died, people that worked very hard to make this vaccine, and I had given them so hard time myself by pushing them. And I could feel that now they can see their efforts rewarded. So very mixed feelings. My family back in Greece, my father-in-law on the 80s, we were worried a lot about him, and now that he would be able to get the vaccination. So all the human things that everybody can have from news like that came only 5-6 hours later in the evening.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at stiefel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stiefel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier, too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Since you're mentioning your family, it's a good segue. I wanted to switch gears and ask you about your family ancestry. Your mother, she's a Holocaust survivor. She has an incredible story. From what I read, she was minutes away from execution by a firing squad when she was spared via ransom by her non-Jewish brother-in-law. How old were you when you first learned about this story?
Very young, because the family used to come together, and, you know, my mother had also brothers that they went to Auschwitz and they survived and came back. Unfortunately, not their parents, but themselves they did. And they were a very close family. So Sundays, you typically, we'll get all together to have a family lunch. And they will tell stories. It's one of them, one from the camps, my mother from the prison in Greece where she was imprisoned and the execution camp. Her sister that paid the ransom, her husband, the non-Jewish husband, a beloved uncle that paid basically everything he had at the time to Germans, to Nazis, so that they can spare her life. So I was listening all of that from very, very young age. And the thing that was very important and that built our personalities, me, my sister, all my cousins, but we were all together, was that not a single one of them were speaking about revenge or hate or bitterness, or they were teaching us how to make sure that we will pay the price back to those that they did that to us, that they killed my grandparents that I never met, and all of that. It was more a celebration of life for them, that they were, my mom particularly, that was a very, very optimistic person in her life. She would use that as an example, but never say, this is the end. But never say, this is impossible. Everything is possible. Just have faith, believe, and try. And that is something that put a stamp on me from very young age.
That's a great message. Anything is possible. Everything is possible so long as you stick to it. And it sounds like your mother took a very positive approach to it, as opposed to having fear or anger and trying to think of ways to retaliate. She took this as a hard lesson learned in life and was positive about that. So how has your family's history shaped you and influenced the person, the leader you are today? How are you applying these lessons to, say, leadership at work?
You know, everybody, I think, has a very strong influence from their family. This is where they grow up. And positive or negative, everybody has, let's say, very strong influence. The same is with me, everything I am. I think the optimism that my mother had, I think, was transferred to me. And I do that in every aspect of my life, including business.
So that positivity, that empathy is what you've been able to translate to value in business, maybe in dealing with your employees, your staff. Would you say that that's accurate?
It is accurate. And you used a very nice word, because I think just paying tributes to my mom. She had a lot of empathy for people. The fact that she went through hell, I think, made her even more compassionate to others. And I could see it every day in the way that she was treating others, particularly those that they didn't have enough. Thank you for bringing that to work. It reminded me.
So what are you most proud of with your contribution to Pfizer? And what are you most excited about for the Pfizer's transformative journey?
Look, I'm never satisfied with my contribution to anything, so I think I need to do way more. There were a few things that give me optimism for the future. And this is that we were able to demonstrate to this organization in the most profound way what my mom was taught me. Nothing is impossible. You can do the impossible possible. It's just you need to have perseverance, you believe, and they go for it. Don't take no for an answer, and results will come. I think that's what makes Pfizer now unique. I think what makes Pfizer standing out right now. People believe, yes, we are Pfizer, we can make it. And I think then we will see this COVID vaccine type of moments in rare diseases, in cardiovascular diseases, in cancer, in rheumatoid arthritis, in many different diseases. That the need is unmet, the medical need, yet. I think that's the biggest thing that Pfizer has right now to feel proud of.
As a leader, what's one of the biggest mistakes you've ever made and you learned from this?
So many. And I'm sure I did, I know, but I did several also during the COVID development. Thankfully, not very critical. I will tell you one that I regret even during COVID, right? So I was putting a lot of pressure on the teams to be able to develop the vaccine. And I think all of them, not most of them, all of them, they're fine with that because they knew what it is at stake. And no matter how unpleasant that pressure could be, they knew that we all needed to excel. But I'm a human being, so a few times the emotions made me to lost. And I was maybe disrespectful to some people, or I spoke down. I regret that. I mean, it was so unfair for people. I mean, as Mediterranean, after that, I would call them to apologize, but this is not the point. The point is that I did it. So that's something that I regret profoundly that I did. And it was also very unfair because those people were working day and night. So I apologize to them. I hope they forgive me.
During the pandemic, you spent a lot of time in Greece. And do you think with this new work from home environment, you'll spend even more time in Greece?
I wish I could spend even more. I spent a month during my vacations, 2 weeks of vacations. And then I took 2 weeks that I worked from Greece. And that was feasible because everybody was working from somewhere in front of a computer. Yes, I think pandemic forced us to do a major experiment that we would never dare to do under normal conditions. I'm joking by saying if someone was coming in my office in January of 2020 and would tell me, I have a bright idea, we should let everybody work from home for the next 1 year, no one comes to the office, I would think that they are nuts. I would never think that that's something that we could do. And then suddenly we are forced to do it, and guess what? It worked very, very well. I think that we have a lot to learn because 1 year is not enough to drive conclusions. It was clear that we could work among people that know each other very well. What about new hires that they don't know anyone? I mean, is the period, the minimum period that people need to get acclimated before they can be productive on a digital environment? All of that needs to be seen in the future. And I think eventually a hybrid model of higher flexibility will be embraced by all because it's way more human-centric. Flexibility allows people to have a peace of mind, allows a father to walk the kids into the school and come back to, or go and pick them up and come back to home and work from them rather than, which was impossible to do if he was sitting in an office 1 hour away from home. Or someone to do the shopping. So it's flexibility is good, and I think happy people always perform better. And I think it's here to stay.
That's a great message. Flexibility and happy people perform better. Absolutely. So as you know, this podcast is called Out of Office. What is your favorite thing to do when you're in Greece, when you're out of the office?
Look, you need to put it into context. Usually I'm in Greece during summertime, for example. This is where I try to go. And I left Greece 26 years ago. I always, 26 times, 26 summers, I've been to Greece. And I've been for vacations together with my friends from high school, who they are waiting for me with their wives and me and my wife, and we go together. This is what we do. And usually we like to have 1 week touring islands, different islands every time, because there are so many Greek islands and they are very different one from another. And then we settle somewhere that we can relax and enjoy the sun and the good company.
Have you ever gone scuba diving off any of the islands?
I did. I was quite good in scuba diving, and I haven't done it in the last 4 years, I think, because I became CEO and was very busy, and then the COVID came and make it, but I love scuba diving.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I love scuba diving as well. One way to tell a lot about someone is where they've been, where they've traveled to, and what they collect. So everyone collects something. What do you collect?
I like to take pictures, particularly on my private trips. Photography was a hobby of mine. I like, in the beginning, of course, was black and white, more artistic forms of photo when I was young. Now it's digital. And that's, I think, that what I like to collect the most.
Hi, I'm Ron Kraszewski, Chairman and CEO of Stifel. Financial advisors, if you're not growing your practice, you're losing market share. Stifel is a growing entrepreneurial, advisor-centric firm built for successful advisors like you. Imagine having the resources of the largest wirehouses and the support of the boutique shops, but none of the bureaucracy to get in the way of you serving your clients. At Stifel, it's your business, your book, your clients. I always tell the advisors we're recruiting, I want you to come to Stifel and double or triple your business. Most of them laugh and shake their heads, but I'm serious. Don't take it from me. Take it from Stifel's number one finish in J.D. Power's 2023 U.S. Financial Advisor Satisfaction Study. So there's a reason why 148 financial advisors joined Stifel last year. Come join us and find out why Stifel is the firm where success meets success. Visit www.choosestifel.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Merck is likely to be the first to market with a COVID pill. Where does that leave Pfizer? How is Pfizer thinking about how it will make its own wave and be different?
Look, I think Merck announced very good results, a 50% efficacy, and now they are submitting the paperwork to FDA so that they can get an approval. We are working on a different mechanism of action, very different, but still oral. It's a pill. And we are waiting to see our results. I hope that we are successful as well. I hope that we have two oral options so that physicians can choose based on the conditions of the patients. Options are always very good. What we do it is to try to make sure that we come to a very good medicine. And the way we define very good medicine, it is high efficacy, outstanding safety. And we should be able to end something that we can produce at scale. We are running the studies, hoping that what we predict will become reality. But I have seen many times in science, it's like love science. You can get the best satisfaction and the biggest disappointment sometimes. So I hope that in this case, we will get great satisfaction when we see the results.
What are your thoughts about mixing and matching booster shots?
I think that it is provides flexibility. It means very little right now if you have Ampere availability of vaccines. So if someone got Moderna, can stay with Moderna. If someone got Pfizer, can stay with Pfizer. It's more important if someone got Moderna and suddenly there is no Moderna, or if someone got Pfizer and suddenly there is no Pfizer available, can we substitute with Moderna? I think that's most of the cases. But I think always flexibility is a good thing. It's a small study, I repeat, but that NIH has done, but it's a very well-designed study. So we will see what FDA and CDC will say.
You got the booster shot. How long does this shot last? Are there concerns that people who maybe took the vaccine last February are currently at risk?
I think yes. If they got in February, they are more than 6 months. And already there is a recommendation that if they are having a profession that exposed them to risk of high risk of COVID, or if they have underlying conditions, or if they are above 65 years old, they should take. In other countries, actually, the age is way, way down. So I think eventually in the U.S. also, the authorities, as they are getting more and more data and information, will transition to bringing the booster to earlier stages. Now, how long the booster will last, I don't think we know, because we need to wait for at least a year and then 2 years. If I have to make a prediction, I believe that we should be able to get good immune responses for at least 1 year. But that remains to be seen. So we can move into a situation that we have a series of 3 vaccinations and then annual for life or for as long as there is COVID around. Vaccinations should keep us very, very well protected and able to live a normal life.
So here in the U.S., we're talking about booster jabs and shots for kids 5 to 11 years old. However, in other countries, some people are still waiting for their first jab. How do you feel about Pfizer's role providing more equitable access to vaccines?
I think it's extremely important, our role, to provide equitable access. And to be able to have a vaccine that everybody can have, there are 3 conditions. The first is to develop a vaccine, because now you consider it given. 12 months ago, nobody thought that we will be able to have one. So we made one. The second is to give it to all at a price that they can afford. And we are giving right now our vaccine with a tier pricing. If you are a high-income country, it is the cost of a takeaway meal for the government. And then the government gives it for free to the citizens. But for the government, a cost of a takeaway meal. If it is, though, a middle-income country, not a high-income country, it is half of this cost from our side. And if it is a low-income country, then we give it a non-for-profit base. So the price is not an issue for them. And then the third that needs to be done is to have enough vaccine for all. And in the first 6 months, we produced 1 billion doses. But right now, in the second 6 months of this year, we are going to produce an additional 2 billion doses. So 3 billion in total. And next year, 4 billion doses. We did that because we put significant manufacturing investments behind it and, of course, a lot of expertise to be able to do that. I think pretty soon everybody will have availability if they want to make a vaccine. I think there will be, in the low-income countries, I foresee different type of challenges in a few months. The challenges would be their infrastructure to be able to do massive vaccinations, and also the ability to convince everyone to get the vaccine. But I think pretty soon we should be able to have enough for everyone. Just to give you also a magnitude, right now we have provided vaccines to 146 countries so far. 146 countries have received the vaccine. Right now, approximately 550 million doses have, so far, until now, have gone to lower and middle income countries. And by the end of this year, which is at the end of December, we should have exceeded 1 billion doses to low and middle income countries with the prices that I said. So I think it's significant, the contribution that Pfizer is having. And very few companies, frankly, can claim that they have done better good to humanity than Pfizer.
Incredible. And when do you see the nearest term to get an emergency use vaccination for kids under 5? And for those that don't understand what the difference is between emergency approval and just full FDA approval, can you explain that?
Yes, emergency authorization, it is a process that FDA uses when there is an immediate threat, risk to the health of citizens, and then they have accelerated processes in terms of reviewing data, et cetera, so that they can provide an approval to a vaccine. It doesn't mean that you don't have to perform all the studies that are required, but they are doing that in a very expedient manner. Our application for 5 to 11 has been submitted it is under review. And there will be an advisory committee of independent experts, independent from FDA as well, of course, independent from us, but will review the data and also will provide advice to the FDA. That will happen before the end of this month. This is a new formulation for those kids. It is one third of the dose. So it is in one shot of an adult vaccine, we are giving 30 micrograms of mRNA. In this shot for 5 to 11, we will give 10 micrograms of an mRNA. And we were very, very pleased to see the results because, of course, the safety profile is excellent because it's very good because of one-third of the dose. We were wondering if we will be able to have equal high immunogenicity with one-third of the dose, and we had very good. And also very good efficacy because also we are measuring that. So all news are good. And we are working also to another age group, 2 to 5. Over there, we are going to use even less mRNA, 2 micrograms instead of 30 on the adults. And those studies are ongoing.
And what do you want your legacy to be? How do you want to be remembered?
I don't know. I'm not ready to think I want to be remembered, but clearly that I had, like everyone in life, you want to know that you had an impact in the lives of others. Irrelevant if this is an impact in the lives of your kids or if you're in a position to have an impact in the lives of the citizens of a country or the patients of a group. That's what I want to do. And we have done a few things that make me feel very, very good. But I know that there are a lot of things that you can do more. So I'm focusing on that right now.
Albert, thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very, very much.
That was my colleague Nicole Sawyer speaking to Pfizer's Albert Bourla. What an incredible story. I was particularly struck by his family's history and the fact that no one in his family speaks about their Holocaust experience with bitterness and revenge. Instead, the focus is on having faith, a lesson in there for all of us. Thank you for listening to this episode. This episode was produced by Laura Carlson. I'm Malika Kapoor. Stay well. And as always, thank you for listening.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take and Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.